Hi, everyone. Assessment is something that is present in every educational institution, ranging from pre-K grades all the way up to higher education. Assessment is used for many purposes, but fundamentally, assessment is intended to identify and improve practices that promote student learning. However, because assessment is also used for many other reasons, even including school funding, it's fair to question whether the tools of assessment have strayed from their primary functions. Also, are there ways to do assessment that are more learner-centered? That's what is going to be our topic of conversation on today's Teaching Matters.
Welcome to Teaching Matters, a podcast exploring all things teaching and learning. Teaching Matters is produced by NPR affiliate WOUV Public Media in Athens, Ohio. And here is your host, Dr. Scott Titsworth, Dean of the Scripps College of Communication at Ohio University.
Thank you, Trinity. Joining me today is Dr. Temple Lovelace. She's the Executive Director of Assessment for Good. Assessment for Good is a program funded by the Advanced Education Research and Development Fund, or ARDEF, a nonprofit dedicated to unlocking scientific breakthroughs to solve teaching and learning challenges in pre-K to 12 settings. Listeners may be familiar with ARDEF from the previous episode on this podcast exploring the Math Plus EF program, which was released last fall. Temple, it's great to have you on. It's great to meet you, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me on, Scott. I'm excited for our conversation today.
Absolutely. Can just so the listeners can sort of get a chance to understand who you are, can you kind of talk about a little bit, you know, in terms of your professional background and how you ended up working with the Assessment for Good program?
Absolutely. So a lot of folks in assessment will say they kind of fell into assessment. They weren't really young people who were thinking about assessment when they were 5 or 8 or in high school. And so I'm a former educator. I've worked in lots of different settings, from classroom to advocacy. You know, my very first job was an early Head Start. And with all these jobs, I was so eager to understand and support how students discover new knowledge and the power of teaching. My grandmother was also a teacher. Aunts and uncles were teachers. And so education is kind of in my blood. And so when I think about, you know, me being the 5-year-old holding class on my basement steps in Virginia and my friends from the neighborhood to a professor who found the most peaceful places in Western Pennsylvania were in my friends' schools, you know, versus my office, I realized that there was something super powerful about learning that I just could not shake. And so all of my positions have been really close to community, really close to education, really close to teaching. And so that's really my background and kind of how I found myself here at Assessment for Good.
My listeners maybe have learned about Assessment for Good because of the previous podcast, but if somebody, you know, just tuned in because they heard, you know, they're interested in assessment, can you kind of describe how ARDEF works and then how your program works as, you know, sort of a funded program within that?
Absolutely. So the Advanced Education Research and Development Fund, or ARDEF, is a nonprofit organization that's dedicated to having a catalytic impact on some of the biggest opportunity areas in education. And the unique thing about ARDEF is that it gives us the ability to think about the power of innovation through a bold approach, and that we leverage that through scientific breakthroughs and technological capabilities. And through Assessment for Good, we do that exact thing. We think about the foundational, basic approaches to research, think about the capabilities that might make an outsized impact on education. And we do that through a research-informed process. And so we tackle this at AFG by looking at the power of the current opportunity that exists, which is we're asking some big questions about assessment now. I don't know, you know, at conferences you go to, places, people are asking big questions about assessment. They're also asking big questions about these leading edge technologies like machine learning or artificial intelligence. So when I think about the current opportunity that exists in educational assessment, we couldn't help but tackle that as a program at ARDEF.
So, you know, because of your role and also your professional background, you have sort of a very broad understanding of assessment and its practices, you know, sort of nationally. Can you kind of describe, not talking specifically about your programs yet, but just generally speaking, how does assessment work sort of in that broad landscape? I mean, what are the processes that schools and districts might go through? How do they use data that comes from assessment? All this sort of in an ideal world, I understand.
Absolutely. So I think when we think about assessment, assessment for good, assessment has really tried to serve so many purposes in education, whether we're trying to make sure resources get aligned in the right place for the right learners at the right time, or if we're trying to understand how to unlock the next instructional moment. The goal is assessment can give us a lot of information. It's one of the most powerful levers we actually have in education. And the goal is that we do a lot with it. However, when it's used improperly, it can lead to decisions that close doors for opportunity for learners all across this nation. And so when you think about the typical assessment practices, we're generally trying to use them to confirm that a learner has learned something at a sufficient level to move forward in the curriculum, like a unit test or an exam at the end of a term. There's also this idea of classroom-based assessment. And we think about, when I was an educator, I would sometimes quickly create an exit ticket, right? That's also assessment. And so assessment comes in so many forms. As a former special educator, we also use assessment in a variety of ways for eligibility. But I ultimately think that when we think about the bones of assessment, it really is about what is my next move as a teacher? And then how can I leverage that through lots of different ways to understand what students know and what they want to know as well?
Yeah, I mean, I can relate to this. Obviously, in higher education, we also do assessment. And, in my college, we've fundamentally decided that some sort of a portfolio-based assessment is what is most advantageous for our students as they matriculate through. In other words, they've got something to point to and say, this is the stuff that I did while I was in the program. But then we learn a lot from that when we actually look at that and say, what are the skills that they're developing along the way? So, in an ideal world, assessments providing people like me and the teachers that I work with, and then those sorts of people all across the country with great information on how to think about the next group of students, the next generation. I know also, though, and you've alluded to this, and I did in the introduction, that, there are situations where assessment has a lot of stakes associated with it. And I think many people that have looked at assessment or read about it have heard the phrase high stakes testing. Is that still something that is going on? And what could be the negative consequences of assessment practices that carry a lot of impact and maybe aren't fully thought through?
I deeply appreciate this question, Scott. I think a lot of us think about high stakes testing. We've heard high stakes testing. And for me, it actually is a double-edged sword because on one hand, it is used to describe a test where important decisions are made about placement, resource allocation, school admission, eligibility for services, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, and more. But the common denominator across all of these scenarios is that it's based upon that test taker's performance on that test at that specific point in time. And I've been in education long enough, I hate to say that, but I've been in education long enough to also believe that every decision we make, even the small ones at the classroom level, can have an outsized impact on that learner's educational opportunity for growth and reaching their full potential. And so I think every outcome on an assessment can lead to a decision that is high stakes. But we typically look at this in terms of entrance exams and things of that nature. But I do think that there are so many decisions that are made that each of them can be categorized as having an impact, which I think can be high stakes for that learner, even if we may not mean it to be at that time.
The program that you specifically run, Assessment for Good, in some ways tries to flip the script on this and tries to use research-based practices to promote effective assessment. What do you mean by that? In other words, what is the philosophy of Assessment for Good that you're trying to achieve with the programs that you sponsor?
Yeah, so at AFG, we want to provide the right tools for all of those important decisions that educators make every single day. In 2021, EdWeek published an article that called attention to teachers making at least 1,500 decisions a day. That is, astronomical. Yeah. And that's a big feat for any type of educator. And I think about educators who are at the beginning of their journey, in the middle of their journey, and many of those decisions are so automatic, and it's based upon the information they glean from lots of different sources, including assessment data. And unfortunately, that data is outdated. It comes too late for it to have the most impact. And so for us at Assessment for Good, we think about this idea of the process of me as an educator getting to understand how learners are discovering the world around them, whether it's learning the sounds that each letter makes or the thrill we had when we would light magnesium on fire in chemistry, or maybe that was just me. But this idea of they think through complex things all the time. And as an educator, I want to understand how they learn and apply that knowledge. And so at Assessment for Good, we're thinking about solutions that do that, that allow us to not just understand the end, right, with something right or wrong, but it's actually that rich process of learning that we care deeply about. And so Assessment for Good was launched with that same spirit, to think about the process of learning, all of those ingredients that happen, the fact that learning happens everywhere, right? That learners are learning when they're on the soccer field, when they're in the back of their grandparents' car. And we think about the fact that assessment needs to match that learning. And so we create solutions for that.
What does the phrase formative assessment mean to you, and why is that important?
Yeah, so I believe that assessment cannot be divorced from learning. So I think about one of my dear friends and mentors, Professor Edmund Gordon, who's a giant in the field. He'll celebrate his 104th birthday this year in June. And he often talked about assessment in service of learning. And so we think about that process of learning, that back and forth, that cadence. You know, when I was an educator, my classroom always had this hum in the air, right? This like buzz of learning. And it was this idea of how do I create new learning opportunities in this kind of step-by-step manner. And so that's what formative assessment is to me. It's this idea of it being in service of learning, stitching together learning moments, and then me as an educator understanding, am I creating the right or facilitating the right learning experience? I also think formative assessment can be from peer to peer as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a student of peer teaching. And so it's the idea of, can we understand what's happening in service of stitching those learning moments together?
I think you've answered my next question, but I want to ask it anyway, because I think it's important just to, you know, really focus on it. When I was reading through the information about Assessment for Good, one of the things that came to my mind is that you all are looking at assessment not just through the lens of the aggregate. What I mean by that is, when I think about assessment as an administrator in higher education, a lot of times I'm looking at reports of student learning across programs and trying to identify if there are places where my programs are excelling or if there are places where the programs need to refine practices, for example. So it's in the aggregate. When I was reading through the documents that you all have on your website, and for listeners, I'll have the link to that in the text accompanying the podcast. When I was reading through that, I got the impression that you were also interested in the individual student on some level. And why, you know, how do you try to focus on that, and why do you think that's so important? And again, you kind of already answered this, but this is a slightly different way of asking the question, I think.
No, I'd love to dig deeper here. So when I was an educator, I would understand that skill growth and development are often nonlinear. They go up and down, they ebb and flow. And my experience and how I learn is so incredibly unique that if a teacher perhaps understood, you know, something that I did on Thursday, I might perform differently. And I use that perform because assessment often is attached to this idea of a performance, but I might perform differently on that next Tuesday, right? And so I think about the idea that depending upon when I was assessed, I might show or display a different story. And for us at Assessment for Good, we want to understand the complete story of learners. And so we think it's important to focus on individual learners, their customized approach to assessment, and what that might mean.
You can feel free to wave your arms.
Thank you. I was going to say.
You know, the funny thing, so funny thing, by the way, great answer. Thank you for that. The last three podcasts that I've taped has had this happen, where people have been in offices with the sensors and the lights have gone off. Okay, thank you for your answer. That was a great great explanation of it, and we got through the lighting detail. So, you know, when I was looking at the portfolio of research partners you have, it's pretty extensive. About how many research partners are you currently actively working with right now? And maybe if there's one or two that you would like to highlight to sort of illustrate some of the concepts you've been talking about, I'd love to hear about that.
Absolutely. So One of the biggest joys for my work are the engagements we have with educators and learners from across the nation. Over the last 3 years, we've had the pleasure of working with partners from all across the nation, as you mentioned. Right now, we actually are in a different phase of our program where what we do is we actually purposefully bring partners together in unique hubs to push the work forward. So that's where we're a little bit different, perhaps, than in our first couple years of the program. And so right now, we're thinking about some big kind of impactful pockets of assessment that we think are really important. So this is idea of game-based assessment. How can we create assessment that really mirrors and mimics how learners might engage in their world? Because a lot of times, you know, the assessment of today is a learner like stops learning to then take the assessment to then go back to learning. And so we want to think about how to blend that a little bit more. And so we're working with partners who are at UCLA Crest, who are helping us understand the role of game-based assessment. We've got partners who are actually full-time with us, who are spending some time looking at this idea of more playful approaches to assessment, or the power of conversation-based assessment. What happens when learners can engage in dialogue back and forth, which they do all the time. How can we assess what's happening there? So where kind of the technology, the system is in the background, but learners are able to engage back and forth. And so that's what our assessment kind of process looks like right now. And we've pulled together about 10 to 12 partners who are kind of coming together with us through this deep moment of study over the next couple of years.
That's really fascinating. I mean, the way you describe that, it makes the assessment sound much more experiential rather than, you know, sort of divorced from the norm for the students.
Absolutely. You know, our goal is to think about what do we think learning and assessment will look like in 20 years? Mm-hmm. Like, what will be commonplace, right? And then how do we innovate now with that in mind? And so if we think about the fact that in 20 years, right, in 2045, what do we think would be commonplace? And we think it's going to be this more natural learning that really, truly happens everywhere. And so if it happens everywhere, we've got to bring that to the present and begin to instrument it, thinking of solutions that match that so that it is truly experiential. Because learning is that, right? Learning is a very experiential process, but our assessment hasn't quite caught up to that. And so we're trying to work at the pace of transformation and innovation, so we're ready for that. I think that is our biggest lever that we would like to pull moving forward.
Yeah, interesting. I hearing you talk about that, I assume that you're keeping a lot of environmental scan going on how AI is starting to be used as a tool. What are your thoughts on, you know, I mean, people understand, generally speaking, what AI is, but what are your thoughts on how that might start to influence the way that we think about assessment?
That's a great question. And so one thing about AI, machine learning, the kind of the more broader umbrella of it, is that it's actually been a part of assessment for about 50 years. And so this idea that we have, you know, these advanced mathematical technologies that are available to us are actually a key foundational moment in some of our assessment. And so for me, my thought is, let's think about where to apply it in the right place. And so at AFG, there's one way that we're looking at it, and that's how do we automate some of the processes when it comes to assessment? So one of the technological capabilities that we're looking at is how can we produce a better assessment tool? Mm-hmm. So thinking about getting questions that are asset-based, and is there a way to generate those questions in an asset-based manner? So we have been working with generative AI to provide a more customized assessment approach to learners, and that when it is at scale, perhaps educators or districts are able to create high quality assessments that are really contextualized to what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. So that's one way we think about artificial intelligence and machine learning more broadly. The second way we're thinking about it is the new ways in which these machine learning models work is that maybe we're able to get more sensitive assessment. So to be able to do that experiential learning, we've got to have better math that powers that. And so we're exploring the ways in which we might think about machine learning in that way to get at understanding skill development more finely, seeing it earlier, right, when it's an emerging skill. And so that's how we're looking at it, is how can we create a better process for assessment, not always maybe what shows up in front of the learner, but how under the hood we can create better tools for the field.
One of the objectives of Assessment for Good, obviously, in the long run, is to improve assessment practices. You mentioned that you're sort of at a new stage in your program where you're bringing people together to enhance and accentuate knowledge that's been built so far. As you look at sort of a five-year horizon, you know, what happens in those 5 years so that the projects you're working on right now, you know, can start to promulgate, you know, and impact more and more students and teachers?
Absolutely. So one of the things that we do is we actually build with learners and educators. And so even this week, we've got our tools in schools where learners and educators are helping us create them with their ideas in mind. Okay, so that's how we do it, is that we are looking at a nationwide approach to how we partner with educators and learners and collaboratively design these tools. And so example might be, up to this point, nearly all of our assessment items, learners have given us the thumbs up on. They've read them, they've given us feedback on them. Whether it's a new platform, and so we've got an exciting platform that looks at more playful assessment, which means we're trying to artfully blend that learning and assessment together. And learners are giving us feedback on them. And so when I think about in 5 years, we'll still have elements of collaborative designing that, but our hope is to think about what are the settings across the nation in which they are excited for this type of assessment, this experiential assessment that looks at these learning processes, and then how do we provide access to these tools to those districts across the nation and community groups as well. We also believe that assessment is most powerful when it is connected at the home, community, and school level. And so in 5 years, we imagine that we'll be doing much of what we're doing today, which is continuing to partner with school districts, with community groups, and with caregivers, and making sure our tools are available.
I think the last question I have for you, one of the concepts I teach in an undergraduate class that I teach on occasion is called the Hawthorne effect. If you pay attention to something, it improves what you're paying attention to, but then it does other unintended things that could also be positive in the context of an organization. It might be better morale or something along those lines. If in those 5 years you're able to accomplish what you just articulated, we would obviously hope that assessment practices would be improved and student learning would increase. That's the direct mission that you're trying to accomplish. Have you thought about what other sort of secondary and tertiary effects could also happen if we do a great job of having a learner-centered assessment practice like you described?
Absolutely. So one of the things that I've been increasingly excited about is the Portrait of a Graduate initiative that has been in nearly 20 states over the past decade. Folks may also know this as kind of looking at learner profiles. There are a lot of amazing organizations that are committed to this work, such as the Carnegie Foundation and ETS through the Skills for the Future initiative. But the spirit of this work is to understand student success, what we at AFG call the learner's maximum potential. And so when we think about some of the secondary benefits of this, is what happens with our tools and others like us, what happens when those tools are supported by asset-based information? And so this idea of understanding a learner's profile of learning from pre-K all the way through higher education and having it be about asset-based information, being able to provide information to educators and learners about the ingredients that each learner has used to get to success, regardless of the way that that has been defined. I mean, I don't know about you. I think a lot of the times in K-12 education, we know a lot about what learners can't do. Yeah. But this idea of truly understanding the unique way that learners stitches together information is actually some of the most powerful information for educators and even for learners themselves and their caregivers. And so for me, I think about this idea of getting this rich learner picture that comes from tools like ours, that is really authentic, really learner-based, really focused on that learner. Or one of the things that I think is one of the biggest secondary impacts of our work is changing what the assessment is about and the fact that it is asset-based and truly a broad picture of that learning across their, you know, K-12 experience for sure.
I love how you describe that. There's a dear friend and colleague and mentor of mine. His name is Arvind Singhal, and he does communication your research and work, especially as it relates to developing countries. I bring this up because he uses a phrase, positive deviance, and he's constantly in his research, which is based on an asset perspective, looking for the positive deviant that has massively positive impact on ways that things are done more effectively, more efficiently. A lot of his work is in medical settings, but I love how you talk about the assets of a learner and how they figure things out. And we have so much to learn from the students in our classroom when they're doing what they're supposed to do. And sometimes you just have to open your eyes, right?
Yeah, it's funny. It reminds me of a second thing that I think we really explore through our tools, this idea of repeated opportunities to practice, right? This idea of being able to try it again and again. Right now, assessment doesn't really do that, right? We look at kind of the final moment. And so for us, what happens when our tools are built for understanding that repeated opportunity to be able to practice? And so our goal is to think about what does practice look like? Mm-hmm. What does assessment look like when it's experiential, when it is authentic, when it truly matches kind of the learning cadence and able to be responsive to that? I think then we will have nailed the true promise of what assessment, you know, was supposed to be. And in its early, you know, forms at the classroom level was this idea of really understanding, you know, the power of learning.
Yeah. Temple, it has been just fantastic getting to meet you, and I love the way that you describe your programs and the excitement you have for it is evident, and know that there's a lot of people like me that's going to be excited to see how what you and your colleagues are doing will have an impact in our classrooms in years to come.
Thank you so much, Scott, for having me. I'm excited to be here really to represent the work of so many more that are affiliated with Assessment for Good and AIR4 broadly.
Absolutely. So my guest today has been Dr. Temple Lovelace. She's the Executive Director of Assessment for Good, and that program is with the Advanced Education Research and Development Fund. If you want to learn more about that, we'll have the link to the website for AFG and the text accompanying the podcast. Thank you all for listening. Special thanks to April Koska and Trinity Sweet for the work they do behind the scenes. If you'd like to reach out to the podcast with information, questions, or ideas, simply give us an email at teachingmatterspodcast, all lowercase, all one word, teachingmatterspodcast@ohio.edu. We hope everyone has a great day, and thanks for listening.